It's about how we can simplify the way you manage that complexity in the organization. So sometimes when people look at a process model in SCORE, they can say, hey, that's really simple. In fact, that's too simple because our organization's more complex than that. That complexity is in there. It's embedded in there, but we're showing you views that allow you to break that complexity down, digest it in simple chunks, but still be able to navigate around it, understand the impacts of the organization.
Welcome to the New Process Podcast. Learn all the tools, methods, and best practices combined with people, emotions, and a human-centric mindset to rethink your process and push it to the next level. And here is your host, Mirko Kloppenburg.
Yeah, welcome to episode 13 of the New Process Podcast. And this time, it's really the first interview with regards to finding a human-centric BPM tool. Today, I'm talking to Craig J. Willis to learn more about SCORE. Craig is the CEO of SCORE, and he founded the company back in 2017. Before this, he worked as a business transformation and improvement consultant internationally with some of the world's largest organizations in finance, pharmaceuticals, oil and gas, and technology businesses. And as I learned, he's not only a process geek, but also an airline geek. So the structure of this interview fits perfectly for him. SCORE Labs, the company behind SCORE, is located in the city of Portsmouth on the south coast of the UK. It has grown to over 150 customers, and they are using SCORE to drive various initiatives from systems implementation, outsourcing of processes, process standardization, and continuous improvement. So let's learn more about SCORE in today's episode. Enjoy the interview with Craig.
And now, let's start to rethink processes.
Yeah, Craig, welcome to the first tool interview within the New Process Podcast. I'm really happy to have you here. As I already said, you were the first one who replied, I think minutes after I published my request for information. You said, hey, Mirko, I think you're looking for our tool. So let's see what your tool offers. Welcome to the New Process Podcast, Craig.
Thank you, Mirko. It's a pleasure to be talking to you. I love the whole new process concept. Ever since you first started publishing it on social media, I've been following it. It's fascinating and very close to my own heart.
Oh, that's cool. Thank you very much for the feedback. That's great to hear. Yeah, cool. Then you're already familiar with the procedure of our interview, like having a flight, and we're going to start with a check-in. And therefore, my first check-in question always is, what do you prefer in an aircraft, aisle or window seat?
No, I'm definitely a window seat person. I've done a lot of flying in my career over the years, and always the window. I can spend hours and hours staring out of the window, watching the world go by. I love to watch or think about how all the different cities and towns all connect together and interact with each other. I love flying at night time where you can see all the lights and the infrastructure and so on. So definitely a window seat person.
Yeah, cool. I know that feeling. That's true. Yeah, perfect. And is there a favorite airport that you have?
Again, having done quite a lot of travel, I've experienced quite a lot of airports over the years. I might start with my least favorite airport, which is Frankfurt. And that's because having traveled through there with children over the years, it seems to me that all of the lifts in that airport are too narrow to fit a large baggage trolley with lots and lots of suitcases in. And so moving from floor to floor was always taking all the luggage off the trolley, get into the lift, and then put it all back on again, only to do the same thing when I arrived at the correct floor. But I suppose if I was to pick my favorite airport, there's been quite a lot of interesting ones I've visited. But I suppose being a process guy, I'd say my favorite airport is Charlotte in North Carolina. And the reason that I like that airport is, again, having spent many years flying across the Atlantic into North America, often having to connect through to other airports in the US. I always found that the traditional airports, New York, Philadelphia, Chicago, when you arrived at those in the on the morning flight from Europe, that you would spend hours and hours in immigration waiting to get through. When I used to fly to Charlotte in North Carolina, on the flight that I took from London, there was only one other European flight that arrived at the same time, which meant that I could get through immigration very, very quickly, get into the departure lounge in order to relax for my connecting flight. So from a process efficiency point of view, that was by far and away my favorite airport.
That's great. And picking that up, what was the best process you have ever experienced?
Another one, again, being a process geek, right? You do think about these things all the time. So I'd love to say it was something to do with airlines, but actually it's a little bit more boring than that. My favorite process, and the one that I've talked about for many, many years, often if I'm in consulting or training, I'll bring this process up. And that is a well-known fast food chain called Subway. And I love the Subway process because not only is the workplace laid out perfectly for all of the employees to be able to process and deliver your order, but the process is clearly described for the customer as well. So the minute you walk in the door, there's a big sign up that says, step one, you're going to choose your bread. Then you're going to choose your main filling, then your next filling, and all the way through. And it just makes everything run so smoothly. And I love standing in the queue and thinking about what other optimizations can be made in that process. And I spent my first experience with Subway was in, again, in the US. And I was working in a building in San Francisco, and we had lots of different options to choose from in terms of, you know, food that we could take for lunch. And there were a number of sandwich shops, and I tried all of the different sandwich shops, and they all had different sort of qualities that set them apart from each other. Some of them had much better quality food, or in the case of Subway, it was, you knew exactly what you were going to get, and you knew exactly how long it was going to take to get it. And so often if you were sat at your desk thinking, all right, well, I've got 25 minutes before my next call, I know I can get Subway and back, and you could always rely on it. So that's always been my favorite, because it's, you know, most people will know it.
Yeah. Yeah, I know it as well. And I also think the food is still healthy as long as I put some vegetables on my sandwich there. So.
Yeah, I tend to hold the salad and the vegetables. Not sure I go for the most healthy option.
Perfect. Okay. You already told us a little bit about your relationship to processes, but with regards to this question, maybe you can take a step back and tell us a little bit more about your personal relationship to processes overall.
I guess it's quite interesting. I suppose most people would, when they immediately think about process, they think about flowcharts and, you know, the sort of process diagrams and process maps and so on. And I'm actually not really a visual type person. I much prefer to think things through using words and text. In fact, you know, if I need to think through an idea or a problem, one of the first things I'll do is I'll go and start an email, as if I'm going to try and explain the challenge to one of my colleagues. And I'll open an email and I'll write hundreds of words. And at the end of it, I'll delete the email because it's helped me think through what I need to think about, you know, say what I need to say, which is quite different from a lot of people who tend to be more visual. So that's one thing where I'm quite different. But what I love about process is that I am a very logical thinker. My background is actually in electronics engineering. And so often you might design something and it doesn't work, and you therefore have to troubleshoot it, and you have to logically work through all the different components and the steps to work out, okay, where is it? How do I go right back to the root cause to find out what the problem is? And that's what I love about process thinking, is that sort of logical, okay, let's break it down and just focus on step by step, work through until we can sort of start to understand how the different steps relate to each other, what the problems are. Now, I use process visualizations and flowcharts, of course, all the time. And that's a very, very good way of trying to get that view from the window seat in the aeroplane when you're looking down and trying to work out, okay, that there's that city there, there's those towns, and here's the streets or the train lines that connect them up. And it allows you to do that, which is very, very difficult in text-based thinking. So, you know, as I said, that initial thing is that I'm generally not a visual thinker, but that it's the logical nature of process thinking that literally, as I came out of electronics, it's something that's always stuck with me and why I've been so passionate about process. Any sort of problem solving, if you can just sit down with people, and you know, often people are so focused in what they're doing and they're moving so fast. If you can actually just pause for a second and say, okay, so let's talk about that first step. Describe it to me. And they describe it and they start going, well, actually, maybe that doesn't make quite so much sense. So that's the other aspect for process and why I fell in love with process, was watching people, their eyes sort of open up and the light bulb come on going, oh, now that's why that's not working, because this thing here. So all you're really doing is facilitating people understanding their own challenges and making what they do much more efficient.
Okay, cool. That's great. And I think we are already in flight mode here, up in the air, and we can now deep dive into the tool, I would say. So you are the founder of a company which is offering a tool called Score, right? Is that how you pronounce
yep.
it?
Perfect. Correct, yeah.
So tell us a little bit more about that. What is the underlying philosophy of Score?
Well, I suppose as a team, our mission in life is to rid the world of bad processes, right? And to be able to do that really requires you to be able to get everybody in an organization involved. Otherwise, it's just too big and complicated. The world moves so fast. Change happens in business so fast nowadays that you really need everybody to be involved in thinking about process to some extent, not all the time, but to certainly think about process in some way, thinking about how it can be improved or made better or remove challenges and so on from it. And so the philosophy behind our product is very much about, well, how do we engage people and how do we get everybody involved in thinking about process to some degree or another? Now, you know, recognizing that there are process analysts and experts and architects, there are, you know, change management experts, and then you've got people who are just doing their job on the day-to-day basis. And all of those different levels will have a sort of different level of involvement in process thinking, but it should be pervasive. And so, as I said, that's the philosophy behind our product, is how can we reach everybody in the organization? How do we promote process thinking without distracting people from their day-to-day jobs, and actually realize, understand the value of how it can make their day-to-day jobs much better?
Okay, cool. Sounds like a new process tool. So human-centric, at least the philosophy. But now the challenge is, we're doing a podcast here, so it's hard to explain to people how the tool looks like just by explaining that in words. But let's try to face that challenge. So how does the interface of the tool look like?
Well, I suppose the first thing to understand about our tool is that the way we model process is, again, it's designed very much to be, the word you used, human-centric. It's designed to be human-centric. And I talked about being able to reach everybody in the organization. So, you know, some of the approaches for modeling processes are quite technical. Now, they're technical for a reason, right? For a good reason, often, if you're automating processes or really trying to understand something quite complex. But actually, for 80, 90% of the population within an organization, they're not going to be experts in that notation. So first of all, it's thinking about a notation which is user-friendly. And we chose to adopt the UPN, or Universal process notation, which is based on loosely based on IDEF zero. So it's a systems modeling approach, but it has a very reduced set of shapes and symbols in it. So there's no real need to explain to anyone looking at process what they're looking at. They can see and figure it out very, very quickly for themselves. So obviously in a product that is mapping, analyzing, or managing processes, then a lot of what you're going to see is the process models themselves. So you don't tend to see things like swim lanes when you're using Score. It's a very much focused on the flow of activities or information within the system, very much how people work and think about it when they do it from a day-to-day basis. But again, it's about keeping that interface simple. So we'll present, for example, a flowchart, and there's a lot of other information that's associated with, say, individual steps on that flowchart. That information's available to people. They can, you know, there's a button they can click, say, okay, show me all of the policies or compliance points or pain points or durations associated with a particular step in a process. That information isn't always shown all the time, so it doesn't clutter up that sort of initial view that people have of the process. And really, again, you know, that's something that we try to do throughout the product is to try and keep the interface simple, not to completely clutter it up with lots or too much information. The other aspect of it is to try and make it feel, and we sometimes describe it as a sort of Google Maps for your business. So we might describe, say, a very high level value chain for an organization. You know, we set the strategy, we develop some sort of product, we market it, we sell it, we deliver it, and then we provide aftercare at that sort of level. And then any one of those boxes, being a sort of systems-based approach, is you can then drill into any of those boxes and go, okay, let's take marketing. Well, let's unpack that and understand. So you click on the box and it takes you to the next level, and you can sort of see a strategic view of marketing. And then you can break that down. You've got, you know, again, marketing strategy. You might have campaign planning, campaign delivery, and you can drill down on those to the next level of detail. So in a similar way with Google Maps, where you could, you know, like looking out the window of the airplane and you can see all the major cities, but you say, hey, I want to zoom down into, I want to see that street in that city so I can understand, you know, where that particular house or building is. It's that same concept. Someone can zoom right in to see that or zoom out again as well. So I suppose that's the sort of key thing, the key experience that people get when they use our product, that ability to link different views at different levels of the processes, but still access all of the relevant and important information that anyone needs to know. So whether you're somebody in the business who, hey, I need to create a purchase, you know, raise a purchase order for a purchase I need to make, but I don't do it very often. How do I do that? They should be able to easily go in and see that process and understand it very, very quickly. But equally, you might have your, you know, finance compliance officer looking at, well, what risks impact our process? What controls have we put in place? And when were those controls last updated or reviewed? You could be looking at how do we make this process more efficient, or how do we reduce the time or cost that it takes? Again, you may have an analyst who's looking at, you know, specifically some sort of time and motion and putting that data into the system to understand it. So the core of it, having a very simple view for people to be able to read and understand, but then be able to add all of these different dimensions to the process to be able to make sense of it, depending on the audience that you are.
Okay. And picking up the kind of modeling you are using there, you already said you're using UPN as your notation, but how does it look like? So I go into the tool, and are there different levels of process maps, for example, and how do they look like until I get to a more or less detailed process description, or how does it look like?
Yeah, so we tend to just talk about processes. We tend to use the term process map or process interchangeably in our system. But essentially what you would, you know, that you're, let's say you took that very high level value chain I talked about before, the sort of top level of an organization. So, you know, if you took that as your process, you went in and opened that up, you'd see a chart. It'd be a flow with all of those boxes. And the way the notation works is essentially you've got a box that describes what happens and who does it. So it's a single shape that's got the activity or step in the process, and then associated with that you've got the role, so the people that do that or the systems that are involved in doing that. And then for every one of those what happens, so one of those activity boxes, you have inputs and outputs. So an input tells you, okay, when does this step activity start? What triggers it to begin in the first place? And then the output is, what do I have at the end of it? When I finish that piece of work, what's delivered at the end of that? That output then tells you, what's the next, what's triggering the next step in the process too. And that's really the two things that you see in a flowchart. It's those two shapes. It's the activity itself and then the inputs and the outputs. One of the fascinating things about the approach is, what we've done in SCORE is we've developed our user interface to be able to map a process at the speed of conversation. So the concept there was very much around when we run a workshop, what we always did in the past was we would stand around a whiteboard, put sticky notes up there to describe all the different steps. You take a photograph of it with your mobile device afterwards, and then you go and transcribe that into into whatever tool you're using. And we wanted to go back to going, actually, how do we take out some of that waste in that process, right? So can we do it straight into the tool? But if we're going to do that, it has to be at least as interactive as when you're all stood around a whiteboard shoveling sticky notes around the whiteboard. And that's quite a challenge to be able to do it. But what this notation actually supports that really well. So one, by having very, very few shapes to deal with, obviously makes the actual mapping very quick and easy. But by asking people every time they describe an activity, by asking them to stop and think about what the output is, really stops people, the actors in the process, the stakeholders who are doing this work every day, often don't stop to think about why they do something. It often just, you see this time and time again, it stops them in their tracks and they say, well, at the end of this activity, I've got this document, but actually, is that really what I should have or what I want? And just through that exercise of asking them to think about, how do you know when that activity's finished? They will start to go down a different angle of, well, actually, I could make that activity better by doing X, Y, or Z. And that's that sort of live conversational environment, being able to then capture that idea as it comes to someone's mind is another thing we had to think carefully about. How do we make that as easy as possible for the facilitator to be able to just grab that nugget of information and put it against the activity, but then very easily get it back again afterwards. So at the end of the workshop, it's like, we talked about all of these things. There were lots of great stuff in there, but traditionally I would have had 7 or 8 pages of a flip chart, whereas now it's a click a button, pulls a report out, and it says, these are all the ideas. This is who it was. This is the step in the process that it was related to. That's what the notation looks very simple, but it's incredibly powerful in just in that engaging people in that conversational and structuring the conversation, mm-hmm. and getting people to think critically about their processes.
Okay. Yeah, I would love to try it out. That's really interesting. I personally have never used UPN as modeling notation, and I haven't used your tool up to now, so maybe we can try it out later on. But just to make it even more practical, you already told about how workshop facilitation would look like, but me as the one mapping the process in the tool, as a process modeler, how do I proceed to bring the information into the tool? What steps do I have to do to create a new process model and so on? How would you guide me through that?
Yeah, so that there's two ways, really, you'd probably start as a modeler in our product. Most commonly, what we'll do with new users of the product, you know, we run an onboarding service with new customers. And what we wouldn't do is we don't bring a Ferrari along and we hand over the keys and go, right, off you go. You did your driving test 10 years ago. You know, driving a Ferrari is just like driving a Mini. Go and try it out. You know, when you go, and I'm sure I've never bought a Ferrari, but I'm sure if you're buying your first Ferrari from a Ferrari dealer, they'll say, let's go and do a track day, or let's go and we'll take you around, we'll show you how to drive it and give you the instructions. And so it's a little bit like that, because it's often quite a different approach to a lot of organizations. Actually, I'd say in most cases, when we engage with an organization, they have generally a fairly low process maturity. So they have very little structure in terms of process architecture within the organization. Like, the architecture exists, but nobody's documented it, or not in a formal way or an up-to-date format. So we'll spend a bit of time with the company at the beginning, helping them think through what is the architecture, or documenting at a high level. Because what we're trying to achieve is, as a modeler, when you come in, if you've been asked to go and map the, I use the example of raising a purchase order. If you've been asked to map the process for raising a purchase order, you've got to think quite a lot about what's the scope of that process, and you're going to go into all sorts of different things. Whereas if you've got some sort of architecture in place, you can go along and go, well, this is kind of what the scope is. What we're going to do in this exercise is confirm the scope and map the process in there. So ideally, when you come in as a modeler, there is somewhere for you to go. There's somewhere in the architecture to go, right, I'm going from this point. And at that point, you can then say, right, now I'm going to click up the button to create a new process. If that point already exists, it will automatically kind of populate it with the title. You may customize that or whatever, you know, and then you arrive with a blank page, potentially with the scope, you know, where does the process start and where does it finish, but generally a blank page. Going back to the simple notation, you've got one box that describes an activity and one box that describes inputs and outputs. You know, it's a case of drag and drop. Mm-hmm. And we have a little methodology which we recommend, where it's like that to structure or facilitate a workshop. The easiest thing for people to talk about is what they do. So let's start with putting all the activities. So you just drop a bunch of activity boxes onto the screen, and then you ask, What happens? And people start calling out, I do this. You populate the boxes. And then you have a little conversation about order. Are the boxes in the correct order? And then you can go back and say, okay, now we know what the activities are. Let's now talk about what the outputs of each activity are. And it's very methodical. You know, I talked before about my thinking being very, very logical, and this is what works really well. It's a really nice handrail, but it also helps to get that interactivity going in the workshop, because, as I said, it's easy for people to talk about what they do. It's harder for them to think about why they do it or what they deliver at the end of it. So they get that kind of feeling of, right, we've talked about this, and then they all agree roughly what the order of activities are, and then they start to reflect on, you know, how does it actually work, and what could be improved or what could be made better. And as an experience of a modeler, it's really that simple. It's click a button to create a new process, drag and drop the activity boxes on, drag and drop the outputs on, fill in the text, attach any, you know, additional information I mentioned before about when people are coming up with ideas, wouldn't it be great if we could do this? I'd love it if we'd actually fix this. Or maybe you're doing something more formal, like you're gathering business requirements for a new system while you're talking about the process. Again, it's a one or two click as the modeler to go, right, I just need to add requirements to this box. I want to add improvement idea to this box. And so it's very, very, very simple. System saves as you go. So at the end of it, you can close the browser down and it's all saved in the system.
Okay, cool. somehow have a feeling that I can imagine how it looked like. And what I'm going to do is to put the link to your website into the show notes so the people there can find definitely more information on how the tool really looks like. But now let's switch the perspective from modeler to an employee. So how would a normal employee, like a mechanic or accountant or whoever in the organization, access a specific business process to learn how to execute this process to get the information?
So as a, let's call them, I guess, an end user or consumer of the process is probably a better way of describing them. They essentially arrive at the system. We've got two choices. There's a, you know, the traditional search approach, the Google approach, which works really well if you kind of know what you're looking for. You've got, you know, you have a very clear idea about what the process is called, or a step in that process, for example, or even maybe a document in that process. There's a search, and you can do the search and you get the results back and click through into that. But actually, more often than not, I mean, it depends. As I say, if you're using the process all the time and you've got a good idea of what it's called, search works really well. But often those consumers are, if they're referencing the process because they don't know it, or they don't know it very well. So there's a good chance that they might not fully understand the context or where that sits within the process architecture. And so what we certainly recommend, what our customers would build, is what we'd call a, you know, landing page, like on a website. So you arrive on a website. You know, when you go on most websites, they've got some sort of navigation bar along the top with the most common things you're going to look at. There's probably some big call to action in the middle of the page. And then if you scroll right down to the bottom, you'll find links off to all the other stuff that's available on that website. And that's most websites, not all, but most well-designed websites. You know, someone has sat down and thought about what is the information that we're delivering, who are we delivering that information to, and which of that information is going to be most important, and how do we create a path through that information to make it easier for those people arriving on that site. And we call that, well, that's called information architecture, thinking about how you do that. So again, that's another, one of the things that we will help our clients do. We provide templates and examples of this type of landing page. But often different organizations will think about and categorize information in slightly different ways depending on the nature of the organization. So some tend to have a very process-centric view, like they think about how the work flows through the organization. So it's like, right, I need to know how to create a new campaign in this marketing automation tool. So, you know, they can go and look in the marketing sort of process area. Other parts of the organization or other organizations may think of it more in a role-based fashion. So they might think of it in terms of, okay, I'm a marketing brand manager, for example. So I know there's a bunch of things I need to do. What does that look like? And so as you start to build up the process models, you start to understand how the organization thinks like that. And we would then help the organization build a visual landing page that is then shaped, whether it's role focused or process focused or so on.
Okay, perfect for these practical insights on how to use the tool. Now, with regards to the new process principles, there are 8 in total. I'm just going to pick out 2 here for the interview. So the first one is, how does your tool support to inspire people for excellent processes?
Yeah, I love these principles. They really sort of challenge you to think us as process experts. It really challenges us to think about the value we're delivering to our customers within an organization. I think how we're helping to inspire people for excellent processes, it goes back to partly to the approach that I was talking about, you know, this idea of getting stakeholders to think about the value they're delivering with every single activity they do, getting them to reflect on that. And I think that's a really interesting, there's a number of really interesting things happen when we do that in a workshop. So, in any given workshop, you'll always get that sort of cathartic thing where people get together. It's often the first time a team have really stopped doing the day-to-day and started talking about what they do on the day-to-day. And so it's always, whatever sort of form your workshops take, it's always a valuable exercise for those people to do that. But that sort of adding that little piece around challenging them to think about the value they deliver in each activity, it not only helps people to self-reflect and take a critical view of what they do, but it also helps to build relationships between people. The amount of times I've been in those sessions where someone says, at the end of this activity, I produce this document, I fill in this document template. And somebody else in the room says, yes, you do fill in that document template, but do you realize the one that you're filling in is the wrong one, or it's the wrong version, or whatever, some problem? And they say, really? I didn't know that. And so they have a sort of a very quick side discussion of, well, tomorrow when I do this, send me the correct one and I'll use the correct one. And they're great. Or another common comment is, oh, that's what you do. And you've got, say, two people who've maybe sat in the same office for 5 years working and never really understood what each other does day to day. And you get this sort of realization, oh, you're actually doing something valuable or useful or can help me. So you sort of start to build up these levels of trust that people will leave that workshop with sort of higher levels of trust in each other. And so those, this is just an example of some of the things that happen. And those are real sort of value add things to people's everyday lives. And the more of those things you can deliver doing that sort of exercise, the more people will see the value in doing and looking at processes. And therefore, the more they'll think about how do they think more often about how to make their processes better and how do they achieve, some sort of excellence without using that language necessarily with them. Now, I talked before about how we had spent time thinking, how to create that sort of workshop experience, but be able to map straight into the product. And the fact that that can save an awful lot of time because you're not then having to go and transcribe the processes afterwards. You can, at the end of a workshop, you can share a link to the process. So, often what will happen is the next day when you revisit your notes and your photos and on your mobile device, that you can't always read the handwriting and the sticky notes, or you've interpreted it in a slightly different way as someone else has, and there's always this sort of back and forth. And so by kind of taking all of that time out, one of the things I've done in the last couple of years is we've gone back to a number of our customers and said, now you've removed all that time from that process discovery process, what have you done with that time? And actually what different organizations or different teams do with that time is they go back to the original audience and they get them to look at the process again, or they look at it from a slightly different angle or add more information. I mean, sometimes it might be they just shorten down the process discovery cycle and then they use that time elsewhere. But more often than not, what we're finding is people are reusing that time to get a deeper understanding of the process and help the stakeholders develop a much deeper common or shared understanding. I think all of those things are really important for helping people achieve, much better performing processes.
Okay, cool. And then let's get to the high art of new process. So how does your tool support to give meaning to processes?
Okay, this is one of the things that, without going too far in praising the thinking around the new process principles, I really like in your own process where you talk early on about the purpose of a process. And that was one of the things we sort of did this. I say it was quite a small thing we did at the time, but early on in the product when we're thinking technically about how do we store a process in the database and what metadata might we need around that, things like process owner and date that it was created and all of those sorts of things. One of the very first bits of information we put in there was purpose? What's the purpose of this process? And so right from the beginning, when you start thinking about the scope of the process, what is the process you're going to be capturing? Where does it start and finish? It's what is it for? What are we trying to achieve with this process? And that's a fascinating question to ask a group of stakeholders, because again, in some cases, people go, this process, the reason we do this process is it helps us do, it helps us achieve the X thing. Or it mitigates this challenge that we have somewhere else. Now, whether that's the right or wrong thing is another question, but they'll be clear. But that's probably rare, on the rare occasion. More often than not, there's a really interesting discussion that goes on about, okay, well, what is it that we want from this process? So again, just generating that discussion. Now, again, the way our product works is, you know, we don't force people to fill that information in. It's a field, it's there available for you to do. Not everyone fills it in. But we also make that data available for you to place or embed on process diagrams mm-hmm. as well. And we see a number of our customers do exactly that, that they embed the purpose field at the top of every single diagram, for example. So when you're looking at a process, every diagram within that process will say, you know, the purpose of this process is to achieve this thing. And I think that's obviously a foundational part, is just having some clarity on what that is, because more often than not, as I said, there's no one's really thought about articulating what the purpose of the process is. So that's a good one. Another one that we certainly encourage people to think about is how they measure processes. And again, we can capture that information against the diagram, so people can clearly see when they look at a process, it's how are we measuring this to ensure it's performing. And that often goes down two routes. We talk about KPIs, key performance indicators. So, you know, what are the things you're measuring to make sure you're delivering on the purpose or the objective of the process? We also talk about process performance indicators, which are more like adherence metrics. So how do we know we're doing the process according to what we've described? Like, how do we know we're actually doing what we say we're doing? And because the better you are to doing that, you know, the closer you are to being confident that what you say you do is what you actually do, then the better chance you have of influencing your key performance indicators when you make changes to the process. But again, that sort of measurement, just talking about what you're going to measure and why, again, helps people to really start to think about the meaning or the purpose or the value that the process is bringing, not just to the organization, but often to them as individuals as well. We're seeing more and more often organizations who want to talk about environmental issues within their processes, like what's the carbon footprint, or should we be dealing with this company because they do, you know, they operate in this particular in a sector that we as an organization feel uncomfortable dealing with. And so you get all of those sorts of questions, which again just help people go realize the importance of what they're doing and taking that time to step back and think about what they're doing. I'm going to just talk about something that's it's related, maybe slightly different, but I think really important, especially when you're thinking about how you engage with people. You know, most of what I've talked about here today is about interacting with stakeholders and collaborating with stakeholders to describe and talk about how to improve process. As well as having a purpose for the process, it's really, really important to have purpose for the exercise of documenting the process, right? So it's great when you see organizations who are moving up the maturity scale and they are starting to proactively go out and map processes. That's fantastic, but it doesn't happen that often. Most times people are mapping because it's in a very reactive fashion. It's we're implementing a new system, or we've got this change is going to impact us in some way, or we're setting up something new. And that's what's driving the mapping exercise. when you're doing that, as well as thinking about the purpose of the process, it's about being clear about the purpose of why are we in the room here today talking about this process? Because you can go off in all sorts of different angles, and people will get quite passionate when they talk about what they do, and they might sort of jump on a particular improvement idea that they thought of during that exercise, and you can get lost down a rabbit hole. As valuable as it is, it might not be the purpose of what you're doing today. You know, if you're there because, hey, you're doing some sort of risk analysis on the process, and that's the key thing you need to do, it's great that you might be able to make the process faster or something, but you can't spend all the time talking about that. You've got to capture that note and come back to it later. So it's a slightly kind of different thing. But when we're talking about purpose, I often see teams get a bit confused about the purpose of the process and the purpose of why we're capturing the process.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, that's super interesting. I think we need to follow up on that and talk about process purpose and using the tool there. That's interesting. Cool. With regards to rethinking processes and new process principles, is there anything else you would like to share with our listeners about the tool?
I think the key thing is we use a phrase, businesses and the speed with which businesses change creates a huge amount of complexity. And complexity in an organization creates uncertainty, which ultimately leads to anxiety and fear. And one of the things we're doing, what SCORE is all about, it's about how we can simplify the way you manage that complexity in the organization. So sometimes when people look at a process model in SCORE, they can say, hey, that's really simple. In fact, that's too simple because our organization's more complex than that. That complexity is in there. It's embedded in there. But we're showing you views that allow you to break that complexity down, digest it in simple chunks, but still be able to navigate around it, understand the impacts of the organization. So I think that's the sort of key takeaway is, your organization is complex. You need everybody in the organization on board and to have a certain level of process understanding to be able to manage that complexity and deliver what you need to deliver. And that's what SCORE is all about. It's providing a simple view onto that complexity for everyone in the organization.
Yeah, cool. Thanks. So with regards to a more general question, what trends do you see developing in the market of BPM tools in the coming years?
It's always hard to try and predict things. I think the biggest thing I believe is going to happen over the next couple of years, certainly something we're invested in and looking in at the moment, is the combination, it's bringing together the different process discovery tools available. There's been a massive rise in process mining over the last few years. I mean, the technology has been around for many years, but in a similar way to robotic process automation grew very rapidly, we're seeing very similar trend in mining. And it's a very powerful technology. But I'm not seeing, we're not seeing great number of use cases where we've combined that with traditional process discovery, like we'd be more familiar with running workshops and trying to understand the what I'd call the perception of the processes. Yeah, the process mining is all about, let's look at the data and the systems we've got and understand what's really happening in processes. When we do more manual process discovery, it's more about the perception as us as individuals within the organization, of how these processes work. And those two things don't always align perfectly. Sometimes they align quite nicely and other times they don't, but they're both valuable in their own way. And I think it's the bringing together of those two types of technologies in ways that help us unlock that value, I think, is where what we're going to see more of in the next few years.
Okay, thank you very much. And what is on your tool roadmap for the next years for SCORE?
So, without going into any of the details, I say we've got our eye on that. What I've just described there, definitely looking at how those two worlds come together. You know, there's a number of projects that we're exploring around that. But outside of that, it's all about that collaboration. It's about how do we put that information at the tips of people's fingers, that information that we're capturing around how the process works and the data around how to improve it and so on. So it's more collaboration, you know, building it in. We've got some great little projects on the go with a number of customers now where they're building a score into tools like Microsoft Teams, Slack, those sorts of products where we're sort of, you know, where people are day to day having conversations, being able to bring that information in from the processes. And then at the other end, you know, we're doing a lot around visual analytics. So, you know, we're taking a lot of information, as I said, about how people are, how they perceive the process, what they know about how the process works, and then providing them insights into, you know, ideas around how they can make that better, how they can improve that process. Because, you know, I spent many years as a consultant doing process improvement. You know, I can bring a lot of that experience and systemize some of it to provide valuable insights to people who have captured a process.
Okay, cool. That's interesting. And let's see what the future will bring there, how this will develop. But now the interesting question, I think, for most of the listeners is, what's the price or what's the pricing model? So just imagine you are a company with about 1,000 employees. How would the pricing look like? And on the other hand, how would it look like for a company just starting a startup with less than 50 employees?
It's always a challenging question to answer. So we've got we run a number of different models depending on how the organization is using our product. It tends to be driven by use case because we have, you know, various use cases in the product. We've got companies using it as a sort of company-wide process library and compliance type initiatives, as well as organizations using it for very sort of targeted initiatives. I talked about systems implementation as an example before. Generally, what tends to happen is we'll start with something that's very, very focused, you know, a specific project that needs processes to be defined in somewhere, documented or analyzed and managed. And that tends to then grow out as the organization increases in its process maturity, then they become a bit more proactive in other areas of the business. So we need to look at models that can sort of manage those different use cases and where people are at different stages in that maturity model. But if I started at the bottom, it might be easier. So we have, we sort of talk about the kind of 100 person mark and below. So, you know, we have a number of startups who use our product. We've got a number of consultancy companies that use it in consulting products. And that we've got a very simple per user fee that we charge. It's a monthly per user fee. And so regardless of, like, you know, whatever users you need and to have access to the models, you pay per seat in that instance. And that pricing is available on our website, and it's typically around in GBP, it'd be £12 per user per month to kick off and get going. And a lot of organizations will just start on that because it's a really, really easy, simple way to just get going and get set up. Often at the beginning of a project, you just need a couple of people to be out mapping processes. You don't need lots of users accessing the system. When we get over, you know, 100 users, or in your example, there's say 1,000 employees within the company, then it becomes, you know, what we would term an enterprise type sale. And then it's a discussion about the usage of the platform. So the first step is to base it on the same pricing model as we use for the smaller teams. But what we'll do is we'll analyze the usage of the product in that organization. And so, you know, you will have, if you think about how you've got different, you know, we right at the beginning of this conversation, we talked about how you've got process architects, process mappers, process analysts, change managers, project managers, and then you've got people within the business. You know, you might have that engineer or mechanic who needs to log in once a month to look at a process. Whereas at the other end of that scale, you've got the process mapper who's in there every day mapping, tidying up, making changes. So we really need to understand what the makeup of that, you know, what that landscape looks like. to be able to even come up with a model, but it's based on that standard model. The other thing that we look at in an organization is whether the organization wants to take a centralized approach to how they build out their process maturity versus a distributed. It creates a lot of complexity in terms of trying to work out how you you can price for it, but I hope it gives an idea.
Yeah, definitely. So thank you for these insights. And okay, in the end, it always depends. But I think that's important to know for our listeners that are different models depending on the real setup that the company then has in reality. Cool. And now, if I would like to learn more about the tool, can I try it out somewhere? Is there a test version, or are you going to offer a special offer to our listeners?
So what we offer for anyone who wants to try the product out is to get in contact with us because of the things we've described today. That for a lot of users, it's often a very different approach to what they've seen or used before. So for anyone who wants access to the product, come along to our website, www.getscore.com, score with a K. I'm sure Mirko, you'll be sharing the details. And then there's a form, a sign-up form there to request access, and we'll have a conversation about the requirements. Again, based on the different use cases, it's very difficult for us to set up a sort of standard demo or environment to look at. So we'll have a conversation first, and then we'll talk about, we can then provide that for you. In terms of an offer, if anyone coming along, it comes to the website, signs up to have a conversation with us about looking at the product, definitely mention that you've heard about us through the New Process podcast. What we can then offer you is we have as well as an in-depth demo, we can prepare something that is relevant to your specific use case or organization. But we also have a growing community of existing users in which we also provide various training webinars. So if you come along, sign up, and again, as I said, mention that you heard about us through the New Process podcast, we'll make some of those upcoming webinars available for you. They're normally exclusive to paying clients, but obviously if you're interested in taking a look, then we can make those available to you to access.
Yeah, cool. Greg, thank you for this special offer to our listeners. That's great. And I think I'll also have a closer look onto your tool to learn more how it really looks like and how it feels working with Score as well. Okay, great. So finally, we already landed the aircraft. We are at the end of the episode, but before we deboard, exit the aircraft, is there anything else you would like to share with our listeners?
I think one of the biggest lessons I've learned while I've been working in processes over the last 23, 24 years is that the way I think the world looks is very different to what everybody else thinks the world looks like. And so when you're doing any work in process, when you're helping people understand their own work, you're creating models or views for them to reflect and look back at their own processes, then I think it's really important to remember that while you might think it should be described or shown in one way, actually it's the people that have described the process, the people that do the process. If they've described it and you think it's wrong, it doesn't matter. They've described it that way. That's how they perceive it to be. And that's the way that you need to present it to them. And I think that's one of the things that comes up. We see an awful lot working with organizations. Certainly something we try to train and educate users of our system on is, you might be a process expert, but if you're capturing the process as it is today, you capture it with all the warts and everything on there, and that's what you present back to people. And I think that's a really important thing, because if you don't do that, what ends up is you end up turning people off, and you're not engaging them in the process, and they'll just think it's being done to them, and they'll just go back to their normal day job and won't think about process again. So I think that's a big lesson I've learned. Hopefully that'll be useful to others.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for sharing. That's great. Okay, perfect. Yeah, we are at the end. Just one final question, and this is: how would you describe your flight experience with just three words?
Can I use two words?
Yeah, sure.
Very smooth. Well, no turbulence. Minimal turbulence.
That's great. And for the people out there, I'm going to take a picture. I'm going to take the picture now, and which I'm going to share on LinkedIn, because I have a special recording set up here today. And it caused some turbulences, I would say. So here's the picture. Yeah, great. And
perfect.
Yeah. We made it. We are there. We arrived. So great. Thank you very much for all these interesting insights. I will definitely put all the links into the show notes so the people can easily find more information on that. And I guess they can also reach out to you on LinkedIn to contact you directly for other questions. And so thank you very much for being part of this experiment here, the first tool interview. And have a great day, Craig.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Let's recap today's new process inspiration.
I hope you enjoyed the first interview to find a human-centric BPM tool as much as I did. I'm really happy that Craig accepted this challenge to introduce SCORE on the New Process podcast. And after the interview, we discussed that it would be cool to not only provide the podcast episode to you, but also to provide a video to you in addition to what you just heard about the tool itself. So if you head over to newprocesslab.com/episode13, and I'll put the links into the show note as well, you'll find a video showing the two use cases we discussed in the podcast. So the first one on how it looks like if you are a process modeler and want to map a new process. And the second one, if you are an employee and you would like to retrieve or access the processes which are relevant for you. So both can be found on newprocesslab.com/episode13. So in the next episode, which will actually already be coming out next week, I'll be sharing a number of tips and tricks for new process modelers. So not only my favorite advice will be part of the episode, but also the tips and tricks of the new process community. So stay tuned. Thank you very much for listening to this episode. Have a great day. Bye-bye and auf Wiedersehen.
You've been listening to the New Process Podcast. Make sure to subscribe so you don't miss the next episode for more tools, methods, and best practices to rethink your process and push it to the next level. Next level. Thank you for listening.
By the way, if you would like to know how to start rethinking your processes, I can recommend to download my free checklist, which can be used to assess your own process or your process management system with regards to BPM basics on the one hand side, as well as the new process aspects on the other side. So if you would like to download this checklist for free, please go to newprocesslab.com/checklist. Have a great day. Bye-bye.